The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
The enemy of the people, and they are.
It's a serious question.
I appreciate your passion. I share it. I've addressed this question. I've addressed my personal feelings.
And I want you all to know that we are fighting the fake news.
You're listening to Just Ask the Question, Adventures in Reporting with your host, Brian Karam.
Hi, and welcome back to Just Ask the Question. I am your host, Brian Karam, and with us today is, well, he's kind of like, you know, I go back to the old late night show with David Letterman. His first guest was Bill Murray. You're my Bill Murray. Norm Eisen, who was our first guest.
And thank you, it's Brian.
Pleasure to have you back.
So great to be back.
To have you back. So we'll take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to talk with Norm Eisen about his new book that he's edited called Overcoming Trumpery. And we'll talk about the 7 deadly sins of Trumpery when we get back.
In this modern age of misinformation and deceit, Just Ask the Questions newsletter cuts through the BS and gets to the truth. With Brian's in-depth articles, columns, and exclusive content not released anywhere else. Get the scoop and stay in the know. Sign up for the Just Ask the Question newsletter now at substack.com/JATQ podcast.
Hi, we're back. It's Just Ask the Question. I am your host, Brian Karam, and with us today is Norm Eisen. And Norm, we're going to talk a little bit about your new book, Overcoming Trumpery. First of all, I got to ask you, I haven't finished all of it, but you got to tell me, and I'm about halfway through it, and I love it. It's you've edited it, and it started from a Brookings Institute study, I understand, correct?
Yes, Brian. It's not a short one. It's almost 400 pages long. So, but the reason Overcoming Trumpery is substantial is because there was so much Trumpery during Donald's 4 years in office. Even I was shocked when I went back. And the origin of this book was to catalog, because the human brain, you know, cannot retain all the details. So I thought, as the Trump administration ended and as we rolled into a new era, as we'll discuss, Trumpery has only metastasized and spread, even with its originator out of office. But I thought, well, we better go back and look at everything that happened, document it, and talk about how we could prevent these catastrophes from ever happening again. And so I did that. I wrote a report, and I realized that there was so much terrible that had occurred that even I had forgotten, who fought Trumpery every day, that I had better capture it all in a book, and then for posterity figure out a plan, because it's back, it's everywhere, and we've got to overcome Trumpery. That's what the book is all about.
I like the prescription for for easing or getting rid of Trumpery, but let's identify it first. You do it in the acknowledgments, I think, in your introduction. You call it the 7 deadly signs of Trumpery.
Yes.
Disdain for ethics, assault on the rule of law, incessant lying and disinformation, shamelessness, pursuit of personal and political interests, not the public interest, exploitation and exacerbation of division, and an attack on democracy itself. Let's start with that last one. what is the attack on democracy itself that Trump did and continues today through his minions?
Starting with his declaration that if he lost the election, it could only be because of fraud in the summer of 2020. Donald Trump launched what we now know is the big lie campaign, the Hitlerian idea that if you're going to lie, make it a big lie. That is the most effective form of lying. And because
everybody goes, there's no way he could be lying. That's too out there.
You know, according to the Washington Post, 30,000 lies. This was the biggest and dangerous and most devastating. And it's the last of the seven deadly sins of Trumpery that we list in the book. And I think it's the most lethal of them all. The big lie campaign against our democracy. Of course, we know that that continued through the, with an increasing drumbeat of delegitimization of the election. When, as it became clear on and after election day that Trump had lost, he assaulted the truth. He dispatched his minions with an escalating series of plots to, as he, his own words, overthrow. You know, he says the quiet part out loud, and he said he wanted to overturn the election.
Right.
That's the objective of a coup. It was an attempted coup, and it took the form, the seventh deadly, and you find all seven of the deadly sins of Trumpery that you named are mixed in this campaign, but the overt assault on democracy took its loudest form as we now know there were the infamous efforts to overturn the Department of Justice, pressure Pence, to pressure Congress, and all of that culminated on January 6th with the insurrection on January 6th. Well, so, and it hasn't stopped.
No.
That is the assault on democracy. It's the hallmark of Trumpery.
I'll go to, there was a question I asked him in the briefing room, September 23rd. I said, win, lose, or draw, will you accept a peaceful transfer of power? And he wouldn't. And one of the things he said that was, I think, are the seeds of that insurrection. He said, if you stop counting the ballots, there won't be a transfer of power. So he was, that was 6 weeks before the election. He was already, that, I thought that was a hell of an attack on democracy.
Well, right, he said, I'll go you one better. He said openly he was blocking Postal Service funding over the summer because if the Postal Service isn't funded, you can't count the ballots. I mean, it's so like tweeting that he wants to overturn the election.
Well, there's your shamelessness.
And there you go. Well, it's all, but Brian, the assault on democracy, it has the seeds. These are cumulative of the seven deadly sins. And, you know, we document each of these deadly sins with dozens of specific incidents that we lay out. I think it telling a narrative, like it's like a crime novel. It's like Elmore Leonard. It starts with the disdain for ethics. What could be more of a betrayal of his duties as a president, his ethical and moral obligations to the United States, than attacking his own government?
Yeah, right? That's what he ran.
January 6th. And it goes through all assault on the rule of law. He refused. He lost 63 cases, but he refused to accept the constitutional judgment. And he still does it. He won't admit he lost. And the
he's never admitted that,
that
he lost.
All of this, you know, Hugo Chavez from beyond the grave had a plot, and the crazy conspiracy theories, the lying, and on and on and on. All of the seven deadly sins can be found in the contained in the seventh one, the overt assault on democracy.
You say in here that, you know, you when we were talking earlier, you call him patient zero. And you do point out in the book that it's not just the actions of Trump, but there have been actions in both parties that are signs of Trumpery. I've often said, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think Trump was the cause. I think he's a symptom, and he took advantage of some of the problems that have occurred over the last 40 years. Your thoughts?
Well, I think he's both a symptom and a cause, certainly. And we write in the book, as you know, that we start with the introduction. I'm the editor of the book, and I wrote the beginning, the end, and several of the chapters. And I got brilliant experts who did, Richard Painter or Walt Schaub, who did sections of the book as well. So it was a collaboration among the adversaries of Trumpery. But we analyze in the book the post-Watergate protections
yes.
that were put into place, and how Trump attacked and degraded and broke many of them. I do think that he accelerated trends in the Republican Party that go back. I know you're of the view that the decay started with Reagan.
Oh, I could even go to Nixon.
I myself, I'll go back even further to the failed Goldwater campaign.
Oh, good point.
And the most extreme elements, decided that they needed to seize back the reins of power. I mean, in the Eisenhower years, Republican Party was a very legitimate operation. There was a post-World War II mainstream consensus. And so you had fringe elements like in Eisenhower, the McCarthy wing. And what we see is really that suppressed McCarthy. I would put Goldwater in there, the conspiratorial anti-communism, extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice, to paraphrase Goldwater.
Right.
And it's the extremist, it's the opposite of the centrist mainstream, it's the extremist means justify or ends justify the means crowd that is has been accelerating. So really you can look to the McCarthy supporters, their effort to take power through Goldwater, the failure. And Goldwater was a very personally decent man, and of course was among those who helped ease Nixon out of office.
Yeah.
Ironically, I'm sure you've had him on the pod or interviewed him, John Dean was a yes. Goldwater protege in Arizona.
I think it was Nixon's Southern strategy, I think, took some of that extremism from McCarthy. I mean, he kind of started to craft it a little bit more. And then I go to Reagan implement, when he got elected, he implemented a lot of and empowered the far right and the religious right as others hadn't. But as far as seeds go, I'll concede that. Yeah, I believe you're right. It does go back that far.
So it
frighteningly so, don't you think?
The stability of the American system has been somewhat of a happy accident. And Trump is a reminder that we could have had disruptive forces. And it's lucky that we had a Lincoln for the Civil War or an FDR for World War II. If you'd had somebody of a more isolationist bent, a capitulator or an appeaser in either of those two great conflicts that shaped the United States, or for that matter, if you had not had a Washington, you'd not have the integrity. So you look at these giants of American history, Washington, Lincoln, FDR, and you say to yourself, well, what if a Trump had won any one of those elections? Certainly from the beginning of our country, Brian.
We'd be screwed.
It's to say the least.
Well, you know, I always say that if it were, If Trump had won re-election right now, we would have boots on the ground in Ukraine, but they would be fighting alongside the Russians.
Yeah, supporting Russia.
Yeah.
Well, I think the Ukraine, example, the last chapter of the book, when you get to it, you'll see is about the international scene and the damage that was done on the international scene by Trumpery and how to repair it. And, you know, the reason I feel certain that Trump's abuse of Ukraine was an inspiration to Putin. I mean, remember the impeachment that I worked on that you covered.
Yeah.
The first impeachment was about Trump's abuse of Ukraine, withholding about $300 million of that they were going to use for military aid, for arms, for one of those seven deadly sins of Trumpery. It's what inspired sin number five, pursuit of the personal political interest, not the public interest. That's all he did with Ukraine. He said to Zelensky, can you do us a favor, though? Yeah. And the favor was dirt on Biden. So the message to Putin is, hey, Ukraine is a plaything for you. Do what you want with Ukraine.
Yeah, we don't care.
And Putin waited because he undoubtedly thought Trump was going to dismantle NATO for him. And then when he said, oh, Trump won't do it, I better do it myself. And that's how Ukraine happened. So I blame Trumpery for Ukraine. So you see,
that's true.
We've now, in the space of the past 3 minutes, we've ranged from George Washington, from the beginning of our country, up to the ongoing battle over Ukraine. And we've used the Trumpery model to explain it all. Trumpery is in, Brian, Trumpery is in the Federalist Papers, the founding documents of America, together with the Constitution of the modern American system. They warn of the dangers of a tyrant and the abuse of executive power. That's why they had checks and balances. And thank God, because that seventh deadly sin of the attack on democracy was blocked by the checks and balances in the executive branch, Trump's own branch, they resisted him, but also in Congress and in the courts. Trump's own party members joined with his opponents to stand up to him in all three branches and also in the states. I refer to it as the fourth branch, the fourth check and balance, the division between federal power and state power. The states stood up to him, again, including members of his own party joining with Democrats. So it was a triumph of the vision that Washington fought the British to implement in America.
And it's in dire straits today. Whoa.
Well, the threat, there's no doubt that, you know, I don't know what you thought. I thought when I wrote that Brookings report that gave birth to the book Overcoming Trumpery, I really thought that that Trump was going to be out and, you know, we needed to prevent a recurrence in the future of his behavior. What I didn't sufficiently appreciate was the way I worked on that report during the second impeachment when I was covering it for CNN on cable. I didn't appreciate, particularly when you got those seven Republicans who joined with the Democrats to vote to impeach Trump, I didn't appreciate the way that Trump would make a comeback and Trumpery would seize the mainstream of the Republican Party between open adherence and enablers. There's very few who are willing to openly take Trump on. And so now, a year and a half later, well, I think we see it in the prevalence. I just wrote an op-ed on Trump, the Trumpery ticket, that in more than 80 races, I think it's about 85 races across the country, governors, AGs, secretaries of state, not to mention Senate and House races, where there are dozens and dozens of more, dozens and dozens more adherents of Trumpery. Trump has a loyal block, and you can succeed in a primary with a loyal block of voters. And so that Trump has the key. He's kept his bloc together. It's a minority of Americans, as you know, Brian, about 30% of Americans. He's kept his bloc together.
Yeah.
And they hold the primary ticket, it seems. We'll talk about analyzing. And so that's the magic that Trump has to offer. He wins primaries, I think. And it turns out that the Republican Party is so craven that they care more about the fate of America. They care more about winning a primary than they do about the fate of America or the fate of the world.
Do you think
What the F? Is that why? Is that why my father fought in World War II? Is that why Washington waged war on the British? Is that why Lincoln and the blood that was shed on both sides in the Civil War? Is that why the American doughboys went to war in World War I? So Republicans can win primaries with this perverted, cancerous ideology of Trumpery, these seven admitted sins? No, but that's what the mainstream, either in embrace or enabling through silence, that is what the Republican Party is about today. I'm sorry to say.
And here's the question, I guess, that comes off of that. Is there any chance, you talk about defeating Trumpery, but you look at Trump, he defeated in Manhattan, defeated any chance to go after him. How can you defeat Trumpery if you can't defeat Trump?
Well, I do think that one of the most important ways to overcome Trumpery is through prosecution. And I do think that the Trump is very likely to be prosecuted. And I'm going to explain why. But to answer your question first, Alvin Bragg I agree with the prosecutors who say there was proof beyond a reasonable doubt. You know, his top prosecutors quit when it was clear that he was deep-sixing the case. I agree with the prosecutors who say there was proof beyond a reasonable doubt. And he walked away from that. Now, my own view is that he was, instead of overcoming Trumpery, the Alvin Bragg story should be called overcome by fear of Trumpery, or just overcome by Trumpery, because he did not want to get in a fight with Trump and risk losing that fight. He's already on very shaky. He's made a number of terrible political miscalculations. He's now, on shaky political ground. And he thought, I don't know. I'm speculating, but this is the only thing that can explain it. I mean, I don't think Trump, some people say, well, Trump got to him. He has some damaging information. I don't accept that. I think he was scared. He was scared of Trumpery. Look at the power of Trumpery. It frightened Alvin Bragg. And he's like, oh, if I litigate against Trump on top of all of my political problems that I already have, where he's stubbed his toe again and again and again, local alienating his Manhattan DA constituents with mistakes that he's made in his early months in office. I'm going to have a nasty, dirty fight. You know the old saying, Brian, when you get down in the mud with a hog, you both get dirty. And the hog likes it. And then he might lose at the end. No, he didn't want that. He didn't want, but what a
Well, what they did do, when you talk to him, they blame Michael Cohen for it. They say he was unreliable witness, that they could have prosecuted him, but it's Michael's fault.
Oh, if that's true, it's terrible. It's ridiculous. As you point out, prosecutors get convictions using witnesses like Sammy the Bull Gravano, right? Bragg's office, he worked in the Manhattan U.S. Attorney's office. They use far worse witnesses than Michael Cohen all the time. I've gotten to know Michael, as have you. I first met him in the impeachment. He was helpful to us. And he's a reformed man. And I think he would have been a good witness. And I think they're making it's a terrible, if they're pointing the finger at Michael, if they're whispering, course, yeah. They won't do it on the record. They're blaming, somebody who...
A victim.
Who himself is a victim of Trumpery. Right. Now, the good news. So Bragg failed. But there's good news. Trumpery overcame Bragg, but the person who will overcome Trumpery, I believe, is another DA, Atlanta DA Fannie Willis, the Fulton County District Attorney, who has a very active case for Trump's, the seventh of the seven deadly sins, the assault on democracy. Brian, Trump went, and we write about this in the book, Trump went to Georgia, and we have a tape recording, and he said to Brad Raffensperger, hey, just, quote, find 11,780 votes.
Just find
one more than Biden. More than Biden had. Well, no matter if Trump, people say, how can you prosecute Trump? He'll say he believed he was defrauded. You are not allowed to tell people to find 11,780 votes that don't
exist
to use fraud as a form of self-help to conquer fraud any more than if you are a victim of, if your family member, God forbid, or a friend is murdered, you're going to go get a gun and kill the killer. No, you're not allowed to take the law into your own hands. So that Georgia tape is devastating proof. And I think she's going to prosecute Trump.
Listen, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll talk more about prosecuting Trump and the act of Trumpery. An act of Trumpery. It's not just Trump, folks. So stick around. We'll pay the bills. We'll be right back.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. We're talking to you, and we need your help. Seriously. As you probably know, independent journalism is a vital pillar of our democracy. Like everything else, it's not free. We're asking all longtime listeners of the show to help support us by becoming a member on Patreon. For the price of a latte, you can help guard democracy. Join us today at patreon.com/JATQ podcast to help us keep bringing you the podcast you love and the facts you deserve.
Hi, we're back. It's Just Ask the Question. I am your host, Brian Kerman. We're talking with one of my favorite guests, Norm Eisen. Norm has a new book that he's edited out, and it's all about Donald Trump and Trumpery. And you can't, if it's, I'm about halfway through it. And if you really, it's called Overcoming Trumpery. And if you want to overcome Trumpery, it's a really good read. I mean, one of the things I like, Norm, is I'm going through it, and I know you're the editor and you have people who have contributed to it. But one of the things I like about the book is just laying out the facts of what occurred and showing how it, because there are many people who, and this is the problem in our business, the inability to express or vet facts and put them out there and have people accept them.
Oh my God.
Isn't that a problem with Trumpery as well?
Yes, it is. You know, when Brian, when we did this book, we went through, myself, my co-authors, we went through and we wanted to capture all the facts for posterity, and we vetted them. We double and triple checked them. But we didn't only want to document the horrors of Trumpery. We wanted to point out, and we write about the way that the heirs of Trumpery are spreading it. So yes, it's a living ideology. You know, what was so fascinating for me about those facts, and you can't have any false neutrality. You need to be able to let the facts speak in all of their horror. But what was fascinating for me was, sometimes I think journalists are, I'm an analyst, so I have some more freedom to do this. And you have been, I think, the ultimate objectivity in the antidote to Trumpery is truth. And you're not afraid to say the truth about the pattern that these facts suggest. And, you know, it's gotten a lot of ire in some of your very tough questions for Trump at those press conferences. he would get into it with you because you called it like, called the truth like it was. That's what we do. And what emerged was Trump's behavior was not, as some think, random, ad hoc, spontaneous. There was a pattern to it. The seven yes. deadly sins of Trumpery. It was organized and it was systematic in its own perverse, corrupt way.
There was a method and to his madness. Yes,
there indeed. Was a method. There was a corrupt, lying, dishonest, perverted style of governance, a philosophy of governance, a method. And that's what we draw out in this book. But the subtitle is very important because I didn't want to just describe this terribly dangerous and still ongoing through the Herschel Walkers and the Dr. Oz's and the David Perdue's, not to mention the people in Congress like Jim Jordan.
Ugh.
Jim Jordan. Or
Lauren Boebert, Marjorie Taylor Greene,
yes, Marjorie
Matt
Taylor
Gates.
Greene. Exactly. They're all
Marco Rubio, Cruz.
They're even more. They're
Rand
even
Paul.
More, they're even more Trump than Trump himself,
Trump.
The second generation of Trumpery. And make no mistake, they're a danger. And when you combine them with a Kevin McCarthy, who privately, we have the tapes, he disdains Trumpery, but then publicly pays obeisance to it. It's a very dangerous cocktail. But I didn't only want to alarm people about the danger. I have my subtitle to have a positive note, how to overcome Trumpery. The subtitle is How to Restore Ethics, the Rule of Law, and Democracy. And we include in the book the remedies for Trumpery. And one of the most important ones, we have the January 6th hearings coming. Tell the truth about the attack on our democracy, right? That's very important.
They're not going to
DOJ, I hope they'll make criminal referrals and DOJ will prosecute. I think there's grounds to prosecute Trump and others. And then finally, as we've already said, DA Willis, that's probably the most likely prosecution in Georgia. So yeah. Those are all methods to overcome Trumpery.
Well, one of the problems in overcoming Trumpery, you tell me your thoughts on this. This is also coming from Michael when I talked to Cohen, is he said part of the reason why the DOJ will have problems overcoming Trumpery is because they themselves are corrupt. And by exposing Trump's corruption, it will expose their own.
Well, there's no question that, you know, when Michael was put back in jail, that wasn't yeah. just Bill Barr who did that.
That was Donald Trump.
For listeners who may not remember, that's why we wrote this book, to document all of the misdeeds and misconduct over the 4 years. Michael Cohen was out on release. And then when the Justice Department learned that he was going to write a book, they claimed it was a violation of his conditions of release, and they tried to put him back in jail. And he went to court, and the judge said, "This is ridiculous," and slapped DOJ down and ordered Michael's release. Michael's point is, if you investigate episodes like that, it's not just the terrible political appointees, the Barrs, or the terrible leader, Trump. It had to be career people and other functionaries within DOJ who went along with it. So the enablers will be exposed. So I do think there's some. Now, Merrick Garland is a good man. I've known him for a very long time. He's going to make a fair decision on this. But, you know, I think Michael has a point in his case. You know, DOJ really owes him an apology and more facts than he's gotten so far.
And that's, I mean, you're coming from a, look, he was a long time Trumper and you have been a long time analyst. So, I mean, that has some weight to what you're saying, because there are those who believe that, well, one of the hallmarks, I think, of when you talk about division, when you're talking about Trumpers, one of the hallmarks is that they will dismiss what you say as being partisan, which is, I think, one of the biggest problems we have in vetting facts, is getting people to accept facts without a partisan nature to them. So when you're talking about Michael Cohen, they will immediately go, well, you're just partisan. But Michael Cohen was not part of of the Democratic Party, was not part of that of that side.
No,
of
he was my he was, you know, previously he was my adversary. I used to go on TV and, you know, criticize him, called for his prosecution. But I do believe in his own way, you know, Michael is very much a New Yorker. So he's still, you know, he's not smooth. He says what he thinks. He uses the F word at times.
Oh, what the?
And, you know, he gets passionate about injustice. But I do think he's made amends. He served his time and he's helped. He's tried to cooperate with everybody and help with the prosecution of Trump. So I think Michael has done the right thing. And, you know, and he's to be applauded for that. And just as vigorously as I opposed him, I'm not a did not start out as a visceral never Trumper in opposing him and opposing others. Before Trump announced he was going to violate the Constitution in his first press conference before taking office, when he said, "I am not going to give up my businesses," that meant that he was going to be taking money from foreign governments in his hotels and properties. The Constitution says you can't take cash or benefits from foreign governments. They're called foreign emoluments.
Right.
As soon as Trump did that, I was helping his transition, Brian. I helped both presidential candidates in their transitions. I gave advice, and the Trump transition wanted my advice how to be ethical. For me, the breaking point with Trump was that press conference. I'm like, nope, this guy is going to be the seven deadly sins, ethics violated by taking emoluments, rule of law violated by taking emoluments. So we had many of the deadly sins that I write about, the shamelessness of doing that. Every other president had gotten rid of their properties. That was the pursuit of personal interest, not the public interest. You had that. So lying, he claimed a president cannot have a conflict. That's not true. So five of the seven deadly sins were already there at that press conference. The seeds. But, you know, we ended up with hundreds of examples of each one, which we document in the book. And many of them people have forgotten, and they are shocking. I was shocked. And
give me an example.
I wrote and edited the book. When I looked back at the number, the sheer volume of the Hatch Act violations, you're not supposed to in the White House as White House officials. You're not supposed to meddle in politics, like from the White Press briefing room at the White House, from your official position to say vote for or against a Democratic candidate or the president. It's against the law. They violated that dozens of times.
Oh, hell, Norm, they violated that dozens of times in one day. I was in one briefing where they did it four times.
And when you see it all in... when you see the open contemptuousness and disregard for the rule of law, Brian, and just ignoring the rule of law and trampling on the law dozens and dozens of times, so wrong, so wrong.
How do you defeat Trumpery, though? The cancer is spreading. They are now trying to place people in positions at the local and state level that will allow them to control the elections and overturn elections if they don't like them. That's the next move. They learned from 2020. Yeah. That's the real fear that a lot of people have. How do you combat that?
I co-chair and co-founded with GOP, former GOP governor and Bush cabinet member, Christy Todd Whitman, the States United Democracy Center, bipartisan effort, because there are wonderful dissenters in the Republican Party who blocked Trump in 2020, and I think will do so again, a bipartisan effort to do just that. Look, number one, you have to shine a light on the problem so everybody knows what's going on. That's why we have our States United state-of-the-art reports. Replacing the refs is our reports, and election crisis in the making. Those are our two reports that we constantly update, documenting the problem. So number two, you know, you need to support state officials of both parties who want to defend democracy. So they're the best situated to file lawsuits, to do enforcement actions and otherwise to deal with these efforts to overturn our democracy. And number three, the American people have to turn out. For every poll worker who is there to defeat democracy, we need to say to the American people of all parties, hey, if you love our democracy, show up, work at the polls, be an election observer, be there for the count, run for office. Whoever you vote for, please vote. A grand coalition on a bipartisan one, Republicans, Democrats, and independents joined together in a national referendum in 2020, Brian, on Trumpery. So the original example, the single most effective example of overcoming Trumpery was that grand tripartisan, independents, Democrats, and Republicans, both from the treetops to the grassroots, joining forces to reject the assault on our democracy. And make no mistake, if it weren't for the Republican part in that, governors, secretaries of state, judges appointed by Trump, including at the Supreme Court, coming together to reject his ploys, his coup that was attempted would have succeeded. We can do that again. That coalition can go again. It starts with calling attention to the issue. And that's why we have our work at States United, a nonpartisan organization working with bipartisan leadership.
How much do you believe the far left is influencing the influence of the far right? Do you think that they, you understand the question? I mean, how much are they enabling some of this that is Trump?
Yeah, I do think we need to first and foremost, you know, my own politics are tend towards the a little bit more the center left liberal part of the spectrum. And on some issues, I'm quite liberal indeed. However, I think that we need to avoid the trap of pursuing a factionalism, as the Federalist Papers put it. We've talked a lot about the origins of our country because I see it as one big, the history of America. We didn't call it Trumpery, but King George, who we overturned, had a form of Trumpery right down to accepting emoluments.
Right.
So, you know, the history of our country.
That's why we wrote those things, because we did not want what we had. Yes,
exactly. So the overcoming Trumpery is in the Constitution.
Yeah.
We just didn't call it Trumpery. It's all these seven deadly sins are in the Federalist Papers. And one of them is faction. And it's always a danger. We had this grand coalition that succeeded in 2020. And, you know, there has been some factionalism and some infighting. And I think we need to remember that there are larger causes here. And we need to reach beyond that. Whatever I may believe on a particular issue, how can we keep that anti-Trumpery, pro-democracy coalition that was so successful in the great national referendum that was the 2020 election? How can we keep that coalition together? Now, that requires everybody. It can't only be the liberals or the conservatives. We can't only say, hey, AOC, you need to give up something, and not also say, hey, Joe Manchin, you need to give up something. Everybody needs to come towards the middle. And there's plenty of blame to go around at the right, left, and center of the coalition of people after we were successful in 2020, who then maybe did not work as hard as they should have to overcome this factionalism.
Are you concerned?
But we need to use the midterms as a way to come back together.
I was wondering if you were concerned about mid. I'll tell you one thing that gives me hope, and then I'd love to hear your thoughts on the midterms. But I saw the signing. There were probably close to 1,000 people in the South Lawn of the White House. And I was there the day Joe Biden signed the infrastructure bill. And it was the largest display of bipartisanship that I've seen in D.C. in quite a while. And they were there were Republicans, they were Democrats, right, left and center, all there for a common cause. And I was like, you know, I don't know why they haven't continued to publicize the good that they did. But nonetheless, there was a great deal of good that was done that day. And so it gave me hope. But I'm concerned about the midterms because of the ability to overturn elections or fraud or no fraud, but, you know, BS tossed in that general direction. Your concerns about midterms?
Well, you know, I of course, you have to be concerned. But I think that the team that was successful in 2020, of all parties, Republicans, Independents, and Democrats, have to link arms. That's why we have our States United Democracy Center to defend democracy. And there's many others like us, each doing their own unique thing. Our unique niche is we provide support, pro bono support to the state elections officials, irrespective of party, secretaries of state, AGs, governors, local election officials, to help them defend democracy. And there's many other groups who each do their own unique thing. So those officials all need to come together. It is concerning. The push is to get these anti-democracy leaders to take over the system. And, you know, it's a danger, but I'm hopeful that we can do it, Brian. And a part of the reason I wrote Overcoming Trumpery, and I'm explaining the Trumpery ticket, that Trumpery is on the ballot to sound the alarm. That is the beginning. There are good solutions out there, good people, many leaders from the conservative side of the spectrum. I think if we all work together, we link arms, come together again as we did in 2020, we can do this.
Well, let's, before we take our last break here, let me ask you this as a question. How does the average person going to the ballot box or trying to get involved, how do they, without the, you know, I will say for the benefit of your book, buy early, buy often. It's called Overcoming Trumpery.
Thank you.
Wherever fine books Thank are you. Sold. But if they don't have that book, if they, how can the average person identify, are you all putting out guidelines as to who are the Trumpers, or
yes,
how can the average yes. Joe find out?
Look at our, yes, look at our Replacing the Refs report that States United has released, and that identifies the election deniers. That's the single greatest criterion. There's about just governors, secretaries, AGs, about 85 of them, many more House and Senate candidates. And that is the site. If somebody is not willing to accept the outcome of the 2020 election, it gives you pause. What will they do if they get into power when 2024 runs around?
Or 2022.
So comes around.
Yeah.
Well, they're competing for power in 22. If they win it, if they get elected, but they may challenge in 22 as well. So start with that Replacing the Refs report. That is the scorecard.
And how do we find that?
On the States, Google States United Democracy Center. You go to the States United website and you'll find our Replacing the Refs report. And just for a short primer on this issue, I have an op-ed up at CNN Opinion that Trumpery's on the ballot in 2022. So if you want to read something even shorter, go to CNN Opinion. My book launch op-ed can be found there. And of course, I'm very grateful to you as always, Brian. I know we're getting to that point in the podcast. So let me say how much I appreciate you having me back. I appreciate the help with Overcoming Trumpery, how to restore ethics, rule of law, and democracy, getting the word out to people about my new book. And above all, I appreciate your listeners and you, who have done so much to overcome Trumpery It's an inspiration.
I'm just a stubborn SOB. That's what I am.
That's what it takes. That's what it takes.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back for some final thoughts after this.
Hey, Just Ask the Question podcast listeners. If you've got a second, head on over to Twitter and follow our official page, JATQ Podcast. That's JATQ Podcast. Again, that's at JATQ Podcast.
Hi, we're back. It's Just Ask the Question. I am your host, Brian Karam. And once again with us is Norm Eisen. His new book is called Overcoming Trumpery, and be stubborn, folks. There's some advice there. I guess some final thoughts, Norm. How do you see 2022 and 2024 playing out? Do you think there is legitimate hope for quelling Trumpism? And take me out a couple of decades if we don't and if we do.
Well, America has always risen to the challenge. We've talked about that. In 1776, in fighting the British, in 1789, when our first Articles of Confederacy weren't working, the new Constitution that guides us to this day, in the election of Lincoln, the election of 1860, and the triumph of the American idea, the birth of a new American Republic in the Civil War, in World War I, in World War II, FDR, the Cold War. And I think we'll rise to the occasion again. I don't believe that that Trumpery will be victorious, but I think the key is there's a proven coalition that succeeded in 2020. We need to sound the alarm. We need to work together. We need to disregard party and faction. We need to unify around democracy. We need to sustain. It's going to be a mixed verdict in the midterm. Some adherents of Trumpery will make it through, but I think the center will hold. So I'm fundamentally optimistic about that trajectory. And I think decades out, we'll look back as we do on some of those other catastrophes. We'll look back on the moment of Trumpery and say, hey, the coalition came together to succeed. I think that the American story is evidence. It's proof of that our system works. And so I'm confident if we call out the problem of Trumpery, as I've done in my book, if we are stubborn and we have the seven virtues of democracy to counteract the seven deadly sins of Trumpery, and I have all the remedies, folks, I lay out those solutions in my book, Overcoming Trumpery. And Brian, so grateful to you for having me on the podcast again to talk about
You're my Bill Murray, man.
Glad to be here, brother.
Listen, I appreciate it. The name of the book is called Overcoming Trumpery. You can find it wherever fine books are sold and online. And I always recommend independent booksellers myself, but any way you want to get the book, it's a good book. Like I said, I'm about halfway through it. I find it fascinating. I like you, I tried in my book to provide some remediation for problems in the press. And so I found-
Yes, you did.
That's why I find this book I don't think you can write a book today about the problems without trying to give some sort of solution. So I appreciate that a lot. I really do. Listen, thanks for being here. The name of the show is Just Ask the Question. I am your host, Brian Karam. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you next time. And as Norm always, you're welcome back anytime. You're a great guest. Love you.
I'll be back. Thank you. Right.
In this modern age of misinformation and deceit, Just Ask the Questions newsletter cuts through the BS and gets to the truth with Brian's in-depth articles, columns, and exclusive content not found anywhere else. Get the scoop and stay in the know. Sign up for the Just Ask the Question newsletter now at substack.com/JATQ podcast.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.